an author of the first century of the present era, whose work on biblical antiquities has been ascribed to Philo, the Alexandrian philosopher, thus describes the commotion on the earth below and in the sky above. The mountain, Sinai, burned with fire and the earth shook and the hills were removed and the mountains overthrown, the depths boiled, and all the inhabitable places were shaken. And flames of fire shone forth and thunderings and lightnings were multiplied, and winds and tempests made a roaring, the stars were gathered together, collided. Referring to the verse, he bowed the heavens also, and came down. Psalms 18, Pseudo-Philo describes the events of Mount Sinai and says that the Lord impeded the course of the stars. The earth was stirred from her foundation, and the mountains and the rocks trembled in their fastenings, and the clouds lifted up their waves against the flame of the fire that it should not consume the world. And all the waves of the sea came together. The Hindus depict the cosmic catastrophe at the end of a world age, the whole world breaks into flames. So also 100,000 × 10,000,000 worlds. All the peaks of Mount Sinai, even those which are hundreds of leagues in height, crumble and disappear in the sky. The flames of fire rise up and envelop the heaven. The sixth sun or sun age ended. Similarly, in the Jewish tradition, with the revelation at Sinai the sixth world age was terminated and the seventh began. Theophany. Earthquakes often accompanied by a roaring noise that comes from the bowels of the earth. This phenomenon was known to early geographers. Pliny wrote that earthquakes are preceded or accompanied by a terrible sound. Vaults supporting the ground give way and it seems as though the earth heaves deep sighs. The sound was attributed to the gods and called theophany. The eruptions of volcanoes are also accompanied by loud noises. The sound produced by Krakatoa in the East Indies, during the eruption of 1883, was so loud that it was heard as far as Japan, 3,000 miles away, the farthest distance traveled by sound recorded in modern annals. In the days of the Exodus, when the world was shaken and rocked, and all volcanoes vomited lava and all continents quaked, the earth groaned almost unceasingly. At an initial stage of the catastrophe, according to Hebrew tradition, Moses heard in the silence of the desert the sound which he interpreted to mean, "I am that I am. I am Yahweh," heard the people in the frightful night at the mountain of the law giving. For the whole mount quaked greatly and the voice of the trumpet sounded long. 5 And all the people saw the roars, and the torches, and the noise of the trumpet, and the mountain smoking, and when the people saw it, they trembled, and stood afar off. It was a perfect setting for hearing words in the voice of nature in an uproar. An inspired leader interpreted the voice he heard, 10 long, trumpet-like blasts. The earth groaned. For weeks now all its strata had been disarranged, its orbit distorted, its world quarters displaced, its oceans thrown upon its continents, its seas turned into deserts, its mountains upheaved, its islands submerged, its rivers running upstream, a world flowing with lava, shattered by meteorites, with yawning chasms, burning naphtha, vomiting volcanoes, shaking ground, a world enshrouded in an atmosphere filled with smoke and vapor. Twisting of strata and building of mountains, earthquakes and rumbling of volcanoes joined in an infernal din. It was a voice not only in the desert of Sinai. The entire world must have heard it. The sky and the earth resounded. Mountains and hills were moved, says the Midrash. Loud did the firmament roar, and earth with echo resounded, says the Epic of Gilgamesh. In Hesiod the huge earth groaned when Zeus slashed Typhon with his bolts, the earth resounded terribly, and the wide heaven above. The approach of two charged globes toward each other could also produce trumpet-like sounds, varying as the distance between them increased or lessened. 9 It appears that this phenomenon is described by Pseudo-Philo as testimony of the trumpets between the stars and their Lord. 10 Here we can trace the origin of the Pythagorean notion of the music of the spheres and the idea that stars make music. In Babylonia the spheres of the planets were called voices and they were supposed to produce music. According to Midrashic literature, the trumpet sounding at Mount Sinai had 7 different pitches, or notes, and the rabbinical literature speaks of the heavenly music heard at the revelation. At the first sound the sky and the earth moved, the seas and the rivers turned to flight, mountains and hills were loosened in their foundations. Homer depicts a similar occurrence in these words: the wide earth rang, and round about great heaven pealed as with a trumpet. The world all burns at the blast of the horn, is said in the Voluspa. According to the Hebrew tradition, all the nations heard the roaring of the law-giving. It appears that at Mount Sinai the sound that sounded long rose 10 times. In this roaring the Hebrews heard the Decalogue. Thou shalt not kill, lo terza, thou shalt not commit adultery, lo tinov, thou shalt not steal, lo tinath. These words of the Decalogue were not heard by Israel alone, but by the inhabitants of all the earth. The divine voice divided itself into the 70 tongues of men, so that all might understand it. The souls of the heathens almost fled from them when they heard it. The din caused by the groaning earth repeated itself again and again, but not so loud, as subterranean strata readjusted themselves after being dislocated. Earthquakes incessantly shook the ground for years. The papyrus Ipua calls these years years of noise. There is no end to noise, and again, oh, that the earth would cease from noise, and tumult, uproar, be no more. The sound probably had the same pitch all over the world as it came from the deep interior of the earth, all of whose strata were dislocated when it was thrown from its orbit and forced from its axis. The great king lawgiver of China, in whose time a dreadful cataclysm took place and the order of nature was disturbed, bore the name Yu. In the preface to the Shu King, attributed to Confucius, it is written, examining into antiquity, we find that the emperor Yao was called Fang Hern. Yao was a surname given to him in the time following the flood, apparently inspired by the sound of the earth's groaning. The same sound was heard in those years in the Western Hemisphere or wherever the ancestors of the Indians then lived. They relate that once when the heavens were very close to the earth, all mankind lifted the sky little by little at the repeated shouting Tao, which rang all over the world. In Indonesia, an oath is accompanied by the invocation of the heavenly bodies. An arrow is shot toward the sky, while all present raise a cry of Juju Huwe. The same sound is heard in the very name Jo, Jove, Jupiter. The name Yahweh is preserved in shorter papyrus Ipua. In this edition, Legge used this spelling of the name of the book and of the name of the king. His later spelling is different. In Volume LX of the Universal Lexicon, Leipzig and Halle, 1732-1754, S.V. Yao, it is said that some call Yao by the name Tan and also Tao. This is curious because in my reconstruction of ancient history I come to the conclusion that the name of the pharaoh of the Exodus was Tauitom, Greek Tautomus, of the 13th dynasty, the last of the Middle Kingdom. He was a contemporary of this Chinese king. Yu and Yo, 21 is the name of the deity in the Bible. 22 Diodorus wrote of Moses that he had received his laws from the god invoked by the name Yao. 23 in Mexico, Yao or Yoel is the god of war. The similarity of sound has already been noted. Neongi, Chronicles of Japan from the earliest times, begins with a reference to the time when of old, heaven and earth were not yet separated, and the Yin and Yo not yet divided. Yo is the earth. The time when the sky touched the earth is the time when the heavy dust and vapor-charged clouds of the comet enveloped the globe and lay very close to the ground. Emperor Yu. The history of China is commonly supposed to extend back to Gray Antiquity. But in reality the sources of the ancient period of the Chinese past are very scanty, for they were destroyed by the Emperor Sun Gai Hung, 246-209 before the present era. He ordered all books on history and astronomy, as well as works of classic literature, to be burned. Search for these books was made throughout the empire for this purpose. The story persists that a few remnants of the old literature were again put into writing from the memory of an old man. Some were said to have been found hidden in the sepulchre of Confucius, and are ascribed to his pen. Of these few remains of the old law, the most cherished are those which tell of the Emperor Yu and his times. His personality and his period are considered as the most auspicious in the Chinese annals. 1. The history of China preceding his reign is ascribed to the 21 Psalm 68, 4 as mythical period of the Chinese past. In the days of Yue, the event occurred which separates the almost obliterated and very dim past of China from the period that is considered historical. China was overwhelmed by an immense catastrophe. At that time, the miracle is said to have happened that the sun during a span of 10 days did not set, the forests were ignited, and a multitude of abominable vermin was brought forth. And in the lifetime of Yue, the sun did not set for 10 full days and the entire land was flooded. An immense wave that reached the sky fell down on the land of China. The water was well up on the high mountains, and the foothills could not be seen at all. This recalls Psalm 104, "The waters stood above the mountains. They go up by the mountains," and Psalm 107, "The waves mount up to the heaven. Destructive in their overflow are the waters of the inundation," said the emperor. "In their vast extent they embrace the hills and overtop the great heights, threatening the heavens with their floods." The emperor ordered that all efforts be made to open outlets for the waters that were caught in the valleys between the mountains. For many years the population labored, trying to free the plains and valleys of the waters of the flood by digging channels and draining the fields. For a considerable number of years all efforts were in vain. The minister who was in charge of this urgent and immense work, Quan, was sentenced to death because of his failure. For 9 years he labored, but the work was unaccomplished 5, and only his son Yue succeeded in draining the land. This achievement was so highly rated that Yue became emperor of China after King Shun, first successor to Yue. This Yue was the founder of the new and notable dynasty called by his name. The chroniclers of modern China preserve records of 1 million lives lost in a single overflow of the Yellow River. 6. Another natural catastrophe, the earthquake, also caused great devastation in China at various times. It is estimated that in the year 1556 the quaking earth took 830,000 lives and 3 million in 1662. Was not the catastrophe of the time of Yue one of the major inundations of rivers, as modern scholars suppose it to have been? But the fact that this catastrophe has been vivid in traditions for thousands of years, while neither the overflow of the Yellow River, when 1 million people perished, nor the great earthquakes, play a conspicuous part in the recollections of the nation, is an argument against the established interpretation. Rivers do not overflow in the form of a sky-high wave. The overflowing rivers of China subside in a few weeks, and the water does not remain in the plains until the following spring, but flows away, and the ground dries in a few more weeks. The flood of Yue required draining for many years, and during all this period water covered the lower part of the country. Yue's reign is remembered for the following undertaking. This emperor sent scholars to different parts of China, and even to Indochina, to find out the location of north, west, east, and south by observing the direction of the sun's rising and setting and the motion of the stars. He also charged his astronomers to find out the duration of seasons, and to draw up a new calendar. The Shuking is called the oldest book of Chinese chronicles, rewritten from memory or from some hidden manuscript after the burning of books by Sun Kai Ho. In its oldest section, the Canon of Yue, it is written, "Thereupon Yue, commanded he and Ho, in reverent accordance with the wide heavens, to calculate and delineate the movements and appearances of the sun, the moon, the stars, and the zodiacal spaces, and to deliver respectfully the seasons to the people." The necessity, soon after the flood, of finding anew the four directions and learning anew the movements of the sun and the moon, of delineating the zodiacal signs, of compiling the calendar, of informing the population of China of the sequence of the seasons, creates the impression that during the catastrophe the orbit of the earth and the year, the inclination of the axis and the seasons, the orbit of the moon and the month, changed. We are not told what caused the cataclysm, but it is written in ancient annals that during the reign of Yue a brilliant star issued from the constellation Yin. According to the old Tibetan traditions, the highlands of Tibet, too, were flooded in a great cataclysm. The traditions of the Tibetans speak also of terrifying comets that caused great upheavals. Calculations were undertaken to establish the dates of the Emperor Yue, on the basis of a remark that the constellation now, thought to be the constellation Hydra, culminated at sunset on the day of the vernal equinox in the time of Yu. It was reckoned that the flood occurred in the 23rd century before the present era, but this date has been questioned by many. Sometimes it has also been supposed that the flood of Yu was the Chinese story of the universal flood, but this point of view has been abandoned. The story of the deluge of Noah has its parallel in a Chinese tradition about a universal flood in prehistoric times, in the days of Fuyi, who alone of all the country was saved. The flood of Yu is sometimes regarded as simultaneous with the flood of Ogyges. The flood of Ogyges did not occur in the third millennium, but in the middle of the second millennium before this era. In the section entitled The Floods of Deucalion and Ogyges, the synchronism of these devastations with the catastrophes of the days of Moses and Joshua will be demonstrated and supported by ancient and chronological sources. When we summarize what has been told about the time of Yu, we have the following data: the sun did not set for a number of days, the forests were set on fire, vermin filled the country, a high wave reaching the sky poured over the face of the land and swept water over the mountain peaks and filled the valleys for many years. In the days of Yu, the four quarters of the heaven were established anew, and observations of the duration of the year and month and of the order of the seasons were made. The history of China in the period before this catastrophe is quite obliterated. All these data are in accord with the traditions of the Jewish people about the events connected with the Exodus. The sun disappeared for a number of days, the land was filled with vermin, gigantic sky-high tidal waves divided the sea, the world burned. As we shall see, the Hebrew sources, too, reveal that a new calendar was established reckoning from the days of the catastrophe and that the seasons and the four quarters of the heaven were no longer the same. Chapter 5, East and West. Our planet rotates from west to east. Has it always done so? In this rotation from west to east, the sun is seen to rise in the east and set in the west. Was the east the primeval and only place of the sunrise? There is testimony from all parts of the world that the side which is now turned toward the evening once faced the morning. In the second book of his history, Herodotus relates his conversations with Egyptian priests on his visit to Egypt sometime during the second half of the 5th century before the present era. Concluding the history of their people, the priests told him that the period following their first king covered 341 generations, and Herodotus calculated that, three generations being equal to a century, the whole period was over 11,000 years. The priests asserted that within historical ages and since Egypt became a kingdom, four times in this period, so they told me, the sun rose contrary to his wont, twice he rose where he now sets, and twice he set where he now rises. This passage has been the subject of exhaustive commentaries, the authors of which tried to invent every possible explanation of the phenomenon, but failed to consider the meaning which was plainly stated by the priests of Egypt, and their efforts through the centuries have remained fruitless. The famous chronologist of the 16th century, Joseph Scaliger, weighed the question whether the Cephas period, or time reckoning by years of 365 days which, when compared with the Julian calendar, accumulated an error of a full year in 1,461 years, was hinted at by this passage in Herodotus, and remarked, "Sed hoc non fuerit accusum et orientum muter," no reversal of sunrise and sunset takes place in a Cephas period. Did the words of the priests to Herodotus refer to the slow change in the direction of the terrestrial axis during a period of approximately 25,800 years, which is brought about by its spinning or by the slow movement of the equinoctial points of the terrestrial orbit, precession of the equinoxes? So thought Alexander von Humboldt of the famous passage of the second book of Herodotus which so strained the sagacity of the commentators. 3. But this is also a violation of the meaning of the words of the priests, for during the period of spinning, Orient and Occident do not exchange places. One may doubt the trustworthiness of the priests' statements, or of Egyptian tradition in general, or attack Herodotus for ignorance of the natural sciences, but there is no way to reconcile the passage with present-day natural science. It remains a very remarkable passage of Herodotus that has become the despair of commentators. Pomponius Miller, a Latin author of the 1st century, wrote, The Egyptians pride themselves on being the most ancient people in the world. In their authentic annals, one may read that since they have been in existence, the course of the stars has changed direction 4 times, and that the sun has set twice in that part of the sky where it rises today. It should not be deduced that Mela's only source for this statement was Herodotus. Mela refers explicitly to Egyptian written sources. He mentions the reversal in the movement of the stars as well as of the sun. If he had copied Herodotus, he would probably not have mentioned the reversal in the movement of the stars, sidera. At a time when the movement of the sun, planets, and stars was not yet regarded as the result of the movement of the earth, the change in the direction of the sun was not necessarily connected in Mela's mind with a similar change in the movement of all heavenly bodies. If, in Mela's time, there were Egyptian historical records which referred to the rising of the sun in the west, we ought to investigate the old Egyptian literary sources extant today. The magical papyrus Harris speaks of a cosmic upheaval of fire and water when the south becomes north, and the earth turns over. In the papyrus Ipuwe it is similarly stated that the land turns round, over, as does a potter's wheel and the earth turned upside down. This papyrus bewails the terrible devastation wrought by the upheaval of nature. In the Hermitage papyrus also, reference is made to a catastrophe that turned the land upside down, happens that which never, yet, had happened. It is assumed that at that time, in the second millennium, people were not aware of the daily rotation of the earth, and believed that the firmament with its luminaries turned around the earth. Therefore, the expression, "the earth turned over," does not refer to the daily rotation of the globe. Nor do these descriptions in the papyri of Leiden and Leningrad leave room for a figurative explanation of the sentence, especially if we consider the text of the papyrus Harris. The turning over of the earth is accompanied by the interchange of the south and north poles. Harakht is the Egyptian name for the western sun. As there is but one sun in the sky, it is supposed that Harakht means the sun at its setting. But why should the sun at its setting be regarded as a demela? Differing from Herodotus, computed the length of Egyptian history is equal to 330 generations until Amasis, died -525, and figured it at more than 13,000 years. But why should the sun at its setting be regarded as a deity different from the morning sun? The identity of the rising and the setting sun is seen by everyone. The inscriptions do not leave any room for misunderstanding. Harakht, he riseth in the west. The texts found in the pyramids say that the luminary ceased to live in the occident, and shines, a new one, in the orient. After the reversal of direction, whenever it may have occurred, the words west and sunrise were no longer synonyms, and it was necessary to clarify references by adding, the west which is at the sun setting. It was not mere tautology, as the translator of this text thought. Inasmuch as the hieroglyphics were deciphered in the 19th century, it would be only reasonable to expect that since then the commentaries on Herodotus and Mela would have been written after consulting the Egyptian texts. In the tomb of Sinmut, the architect of Queen Hatshepsut, a panel on the ceiling shows the celestial sphere with the signs of the zodiac and other constellations in a reversed orientation of the southern sky. The end of the Middle Kingdom antedated the time of Queen Hatshepsut by several centuries. The astronomical ceiling presenting a reversed orientation must have been a venerated chart, made obsolete a number of centuries earlier. A characteristic feature of the Sinmut ceiling is the astronomically objectionable orientation of the southern panel. The center of this panel is occupied by the Orion-Sirius group, in which Orion appears west of Sirius instead of east. The orientation of the southern panel is such that the person in the tomb looking at it has to lift his head and face north, not south. With the reversed orientation of the south panel, Orion, the most conspicuous constellation of the southern sky, appeared to be moving eastward, that is, in the wrong direction. The real meaning of the irrational orientation of the southern panel and the reversed position of Orion appears to be this. The southern panel shows the sky of Egypt as it was before the celestial sphere interchanged north and south, east and west. The northern panel shows the sky of Egypt as it was on some night of the year in the time of Sinmut. Was there no autochthonous tradition in Greece about the reversals of the revolution of the sun and stars? Plato wrote in his dialogue, The Statesman, Politicus, I mean the change in the rising and setting of the sun and the other heavenly bodies, how in those times they used to set in the quarter where they now rise, and used to rise where they now set. The god at the time of the quarrel, you recall, changed all that to the present system as a testimony in favor of Atreus. Then he proceeded, at certain periods the universe has its present circular motion, and at other periods it revolves in the reverse direction. Of all the changes which take place in the heavens, this reversal is the greatest and most complete. Plato continued his dialogue, using the above passage as the introduction to a fantastic philosophical essay on the reversal of time. This minimizes the value of the quoted passage despite the categorical form of his statement. The reversal of the movement of the sun in the sky was not a peaceful event, it was an act of wrath and destruction. Plato wrote in Politicus, There is at that time great destruction of animals in general, and only a small part of the human race survives. The reversal of the movement of the sun was referred to by many Greek authors before and after Plato. According to a short fragment of a historical drama by Sophocles, Atreus, the sun rises in the east only since its course was reversed. Zeus changed the course of the sun, causing it to rise in the east and not in the west. Euripides wrote in Electra, Then in his anger arose Zeus, turning the stars' feet back on the fire-fretted way, yea, and the sun's car splendor burning, and the misty eyes of the morning gray, and the flash of his chariot wheels back flying flushed crimson the face of the fading day. The sun turned backward, with the scourge of his wrath in affliction repaying mortals. Many authors in later centuries realized that the story of Atreus described some event in nature, but it could not have been an eclipse. Strabo was mistaken when he tried to rationalize the story by saying that Atreus was an early astronomer who discovered that the sun revolves in a direction opposite to the movement of the heavens. 19 During the night the stars move from east to west 2 minutes faster than the sun, which moves in the same direction during the day. Even in poetical language such a phenomenon would not have been described as follows, and the sun car's wing speed from the ghastly strife turned back, changing his westering track through the heavens unto where blush burning dawn rose, as Euripides wrote in another work of his. Seneca knew more than his older contemporary Strabo. In his drama Thyestes, he gave a powerful description of what happened when the sun turned backward in the morning sky, which reveals much profound knowledge of natural phenomena. When the sun reversed its course and blotted out the day in mid-Olympus, noon, and the sinking sun beheld Aurora, the people, smitten with fear, asked, Have we of all mankind been deemed deserving that heaven, its poles updawn, should overwhelm us? In our time has the last day come? The early Greek philosophers, and especially Pythagoras, would have known about the reversal of the revolution of the sky, if it actually occurred, but as Pythagoras and his school kept their knowledge secret, we must depend upon the authors who wrote about the Pythagoreans. Aristotle says that the Pythagoreans differed between the right and the left-hand motion of the sky, the side from which the stars rise is heaven's right, and where they set, its left, and in Plato we find, a direction from left to right, and that will be from west to east. The present sun moves in the opposite direction. In the language of a symbolic and philosophical astronomy, probably of Pythagorean origin, Plato describes intima as the effects of a collision of the earth overtaken by a tempest of winds with alien fire from without, or a solid lump of earth, or waters of the immense flood which foamed in and streamed out. The terrestrial globe engages in all motions, forwards and backwards, and again to right and to left, and upwards and downwards, wandering every way in all the six directions. As the result of such a collision, described in a not easily understandable text which represents the earth as possessing a soul, there was a violent shaking of the revolutions of the soul, a total blocking of the course of the same, shaking of the course of the other, which produced all manner of twistings, and caused in their circles fractures and disruptures of every possible kind, with the result that, as they, the earth and the perpetually flowing stream, barely held together one with another, they moved indeed but more irrationally, being at one time reversed, at another oblique, and again his The Opinions of the Philosophers, wrote that according to Pythagoras, Plato, and Aristotle, east is the right side, and west is the left side. In Plato's terminology, revolution of the same is from east to west, and revolution of the other is from west to east. In The Statesman, Plato put this symbolic language into very simple terms, speaking of the reversal of the quarters in which the sun rises and sets.